This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
WBBM News Time, 12:03. It's great to have you with us for the Friday edition of the Noon Business Hour. I'm Cisco Cotto, Entrepreneur Friday. Trying to bring Detroit-style pizza to Chicago. Is the MLK weekend a good time to buy a car? The manufacturing sector dealing with a worker skills gap. We'll cover that in our next segment. Also, a reminder, another chance for you to win $1,000 in Keyword for Cash. That comes your way at 12:22. Right now, the latest numbers on housing starts, consumer sentiment. It's wrapping up the week of data. We're joined by Bob Bruska, chief economist at Fact and Opinion Economics, based in New York. Bob, as you've been digging through the data, what really sticks out to you? What's maybe the most important out of all of this?
Well, there's a lot of stuff going on. The fact is that the housing starts are strong, and my opinion is, wow. These are really strong numbers. They're strong across all unit types. They're strong across most regions. The housing numbers look just suddenly extremely strong, and it's really hard to trace them back to any particular event because mortgage rates have been gradually coming down, and then they started to edge up. You know, my best thought on this is that people are seeing that the mortgage rates have bottomed and are starting to move up, and they realize that this is as low as they're going to get. So if people were playing the game of, well, they're low, but they're going to get lower, that game is over. And maybe that's responsible for, you know, the rush to buy.
And talk about the importance of housing starts to the wider economy. It really impacts a lot.
Well, yeah, a double-edged sword here. The housing starts per se, you know, residential spending is small. But when somebody buys a house, they engage in a lot of other purchases. You buy a house, you might buy a new range, you might buy a new refrigerator, you might buy new drapes, all of these things. You incur moving expenses. So it tends to trigger a lot more spending. But you know, the residential spending numbers themselves are, they don't loom that large on the economy.
Let's pivot to China for a moment. You had the signing of the Phase 1 deal earlier this week. Now a report, China's economy, the weakest annual growth in 29 years.
Yes. And now you can see why China was so eager to sign that Phase 1 trade deal with Donald Trump. They really, really needed to stop him from continuing to raise tariffs. And the tariffs don't appear to have hurt the U.S. economy very much. They appear to have put China back on its heels. And, of course, what he's trying to do with these tariffs is to cause China to play fair. And although there are a lot of things that are said about these tariffs, I'm an international economist by training. You know, I did trade and current account forecasting at the Federal Reserve Bank of New York. I know this stuff very well. You know, people complain about tariffs, but tariffs aren't the end. Tariffs are the club to hit the Chinese with to get them to play fair. And that's how you have to look at these tariffs. They're a cost of trying to get China to play fair. And it looks like Trump is getting them to move. I don't know if he will get them to move all the way. I don't know when the tariffs will be taken off. You know, you don't want to get in a trade war. You don't want tariffs placed on things. But in fact, China needs to know that it needs to play fair. And I think that's what this is all about. This is a game. It isn't an end result. So when you talk about tariffs and about what's going on, you have to view it as a process.
Thanks so much. Good analysis. Bob Bruska, chief economist at Fact and Opinion Economics. Up next, manufacturing companies looking to upgrade their employees' skills. Manufacturers are spending billions of dollars to make sure their workers are up to speed with the latest skills and technology. Scott Sargis, founder and president of Strategic Search Corp here in Chicago. Scott, before we talk about what they're doing, let's find out what the problem is. Why are they kind of changing their tactics?
Well, two words, Cisco: STEM and technology. With respect to STEM, our schools are not teaching, and they have not historically been teaching, a science, technology, engineering, and manufacturing. And with respect to technology, there were two articles, one in Forbes and one in the World Economic from the World Economic Forum, and one in Industry Week, both pointing to how technology will be more important in manufacturing of the future. And this includes AI, Internet of Things, 3D printing, and 5G. So that's why companies are spending more money, because people aren't, when they hire workers, they're not ready for the technology of the future, which is going to drive manufacturing.
And yet they can't just sit back, these manufacturers, they can't just sit back and sort of wait to find employees who have these skills. So it sounds like they're having to take care of it themselves, that education component.
Right. And there's also another white paper that was put out by the Association of Equipment Manufacturers that pointed to five manufacturing trends to watch for this year: wearable technology, predictive maintenance, 5G and smart manufacturing. And, there was also virtual reality and augmented reality and cybersecurity, all impacting future manufacturing, including this year. So as you said, Cisco, manufacturers can't wait for their workers to be ready for these five manufacturing trends. They have to be proactive in teaching them.
And it's a combination, it sounds like, of not only their own employees, but being ready to train the future employees and maybe even doing some sort of training before people even get hired. It seems really complicated.
Right. And once again, it comes back to the issue of STEM. Our schools have been slipping in STEM, so workers are not ready for technology of the future. So unfortunately, companies have to spend this $26.2 billion to retrain workers so they are ready for technology and manufacturing of the future.
Bet this means good things for wages for those employees. I mean, I guess if you're the manufacturer, you don't like paying the higher wages, but if you have those STEM skills, if you have that knowledge, you're pretty valuable.
That's right. And then on top of all this, we hit the 111th straight month of jobs creation, Cisco, and that's the all-time record. So the job market is getting tighter and tighter in general. And on top of it, fewer and fewer people have those STEM skills. So those are two key factors in why manufacturers have to spend all this money to train workers so that they're ready for manufacturing of the future.
And changes in immigration policy, and obviously in Washington, there's a lot of tension. I'll bet that creates a challenge for manufacturers where they're having to do this. They're having to spend this money because they need to get workers here at home in order to get this done.
That's right. And as your last guest, Bob Bruska, said, the tariffs are not hurting the U.S. as much as they're hurting China. So manufacturers are realizing that, and they're gearing up for this year in the future.
So is there anything, I mean, I'm thinking parents of teenagers, they're thinking about college, they're thinking about trade school. Maybe they haven't gotten those STEM skills already because, as you mentioned, a lot of schools just are not really focusing on it. What can parents do to help their kids so that they are prepared for these sorts of jobs? I mean, is it tutoring or something like that? I'm just trying to think of how these young people can get a leg up.
Well, one of the things that has been slipping as part of that STEM is the math skill. So one of the things that parents can do is emphasize math. I mean, it's not sexy, but it directly relates to technology. And what they can do to augment the lack of math in schools is to teach them math and have secondary classes on math. That is going to be a key to the future. The more STEM skills that their kids have, the more likely it is they will succeed in the future.
Thanks so much, Scott Sargis, founder and president of Strategic Search Corp here in Chicago. Up next, the newest combatant in the streaming wars has an impressive catalog of content.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday toward planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
NBC's Peacock streaming service will launch on July 15th. It will have a free option among the three tiers of service. Let's find out about it. Tim Hanlon is joining us, founder and CEO of the Vertair Group here in Chicago. Tim, so tell us about these tiers.
Complicating, for sure, Cisco. We've talked about this before, right? Not only with the addition of a new service such as Peacock, but also, frankly, a bit of a complicated sort of approach. But basically, it's a way, as we've sort of described before, to start to hybrid offer services so that people who want to pay without to see programming without advertising can do so at a $9.99 rate. But there's also an ad-free option as well, which in this sort of mechanism is going to be a sort of a free, almost sort of preview type channel environment with a second tier that has a combination of advertising and pay.
Now, does NBC have maybe a unique challenge here, I guess, along with some of the other major networks that are doing this, because you can, in theory, get their content free if you're willing to watch it at a certain time?
Well, that's the allure of broadcast television. But an interesting wrinkle with the premium version of Peacock. So Peacock Premium being sort of the second tier, not fully free, but ads plus a $4.99 fee, is some interesting early access to programming that historically would be only on, in our case in the Chicago area, Channel 5, WMAQ. Including both late night shows, the Jimmy Fallon show and the Seth Meyers show, being able to be accessed at about 3 or 4 hours earlier via the streaming service. Same thing actually for the Olympics and the opening and closing ceremonies, which have historically been tape delayed and presented on Channel 5 NBC television. Subscribers to the Peacock Premium service will now also have the ability to actually see those streams live on this service. So it's going to be an interesting dynamic if you are the general manager of the stations affiliated with NBC, because you're essentially assuming that that's going to be an exclusive audience on television. And now there's this new audience via the streaming service that's going to have early access besides that.
Thanks so much. Really good insight, Tim Hanlon. This is constantly evolving streaming services. Tim is founder and CEO of the Vertere Group here in Chicago.
This is Chicago's all-news station, News Radio 780 and 105.9 FM. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Good afternoon. I'm Cisco Cotto. These are the top stories on News Radio WBBM. January, usually a great time to buy a car. We'll talk about auto industry possibilities. It's Entrepreneur Friday. In a town known for its pizza loyalty, a chain from Michigan is finding success here in Chicago. A figure from the Clinton impeachment trial has joined President Trump's legal team. WBBM Business News, the Dow up 11, NASDAQ also up 11, and the S&P is up 7 points. Oil down about a quarter of a percent. We have some clouds in Chicagoland, a few little pockets of sunshine, but all of that is going to be gone before long because we have snow on the way. 1 to 3 inches of snow from the city south, 3 to 6 inches of snow. That's still the forecast for the northern suburbs. Again, some of that precipitation already beginning in some of the southwestern suburbs, and that will slowly be moving through the area throughout the afternoon into the evening and overnight hours. Right now, it's 25 degrees in Chicagoland. The Noon Business Hour is presented by Republic Bank of Chicago. Markets basically at the flat line on this final day of the trading week. Let's see what's going on. Hugh Johnson is chairman and chief investment officer at Hugh Johnson Advisors, based in Albany, New York. Hugh, what do you make of what you're seeing on Wall Street today?
Not much happening. I think you have to look at today and say it's a little bit of a breather, and I think a welcome breather, because we've had some very, very strong days, strong up days, big news, the earnings news, which has been on balance positive. So we've had a big week and a lot of records, and to have a breather is probably a good welcome relief.
Is there any sort of a bump because of that trade deal? I mean, I'm just thinking it was so expected, and Wall Street kind of knew what it was going to contain. Is that sort of a wash?
It's in some ways a wash, but in some ways it's really good news, because it effectively signals that there's going to be a ceasefire on the trade side of things. And so we're not going to have the kind of ongoing interruptions, the stop-and-go trade negotiations that we had throughout 2019. It really says that in this an election year that you're not likely to see much news on the trade front. And I might add that the trade agreement or negotiations, the agreement that we've seen, really doesn't, when we put a hard number to it and ask ourselves, does this change our view or forecast for the global economy, the Chinese economy, the U.S. economy for 2020? And the answer to that question is no, although it might be that we have to revise our forecast higher, because it's a big positive for business confidence. So I think on balance, it's a positive, but it's particularly a positive because we won't have those on-again, off-again market drivers that we saw in 2019. That's the big news.
Yeah, Wall Street just wants to know what's going on, right? No surprises, no uncertainty.
There's nothing worse for Wall Street than uncertainty, and that's what we got throughout 2019. But it's very hard to reconcile the performance of the markets that we had in 2019, which were nothing short of spectacular, with the kind of negotiations, the trade negotiations that were going on in the background, except that those trade negotiations turned towards the more positive as we moved into the fourth quarter, and it certainly showed up in stock prices. Very successful trade agreement that we finally arrived at.
Now let's talk about earnings. We're still early in earnings season, but what do you make of what you're seeing so far?
Well, I think that's a big part of the story of what's going on today, Cisco. Today, when I say today, I mean the first part of 2020. The earnings numbers for the fourth quarter have been really good. Now, we're still going to have a year-over-year decline in earnings, S&P 500 earnings for the first quarter, but the earnings are not going to be as much a decline as we had been previously estimating. Now, the sort of thing that's very difficult for people to get their arms around is that although the first quarter is coming in better than expected, and that's particularly true, we got off to a great start with J.P. Morgan's and Citi's earnings. It's very true of the banks, very true of the financials, very strong earnings. Even though we're having a good first quarter or a quarter of earnings that reflecting, again, fourth quarter earnings, it still seems to me that we're bringing down slowly our forecast for 2020 as a whole. So now the expectation is about an 8.3% rise in earnings in 2020. And about, I'd say a month ago, we were looking at 10%. So the numbers for 2020 do not look as good as the results we've seen for the first quarter, which reflect the earnings results for the fourth quarter.
And yet we're not really hearing any more about that recession that everyone thought was right on the horizon.
Yeah, you know, everybody's backing away from that. And the message of the financial markets, the performance of the financial markets, whether we look at the overall positive performance of the S&P or look at individual sectors where you see bull market sectors performing better than the so-called consumer staples, utilities, bear market sectors, the message of the financial markets is there's not going to be a recession. It might be a close call, but we're not going to see a recession in 2020. The expectation now, and I think it's a strong expectation, is that we'll slow from the 2.3% pace we saw in 2019 to something in the order of about 1.8 or 1.9%. And job growth is not going to be what it was in 2018, 2019, but we'll still have positive growth in jobs, even though there's tightness in the labor markets.
That's really good insight and analysis. Thank you. Always appreciate you being on the show. Hugh Johnson, Chairman and Chief Investment Officer at Hugh Johnson Advisors. Up next, it's Entrepreneur Friday, a pizza competitor from Detroit trying to make a mark in Chicago.
Because money matters. This is the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's Entrepreneur Friday here on the Noon Business Hour. Jets Pizza, founded in 1978, two brothers in suburban Detroit. The company now has more than 400 locations all across the U.S., and it's set to open its 20th Chicago location on Monday. This one's going to be in the South Loop. We welcome David Filato, an area developer and franchisee at Jets Pizza. Of course, he is based here in Chicago. Dave, good to have you on the show. Appreciate you being back with us. So we've talked about what makes Jets different. We've talked about just how competitive it is here in Chicago. Let's go ahead now and talk about, as a franchisee, let's just talk about maybe some of the challenges of getting a new restaurant going, opening it, developing a customer base. Just talk about how tough that is.
You know, man, the hardest thing is people. It's, you got to find the right people and making sure you build a good environment and making sure those people take care of our customers. That's definitely the biggest challenge. Like, we're in one of the hottest economies of ever. So, you know, finding the right talent is definitely difficult, but, we've got an incredible team. They're all young kids. They're all owners now, and they work their butts off and take care of the customer. And they're in there 60, 70 hours a week, you know, just making sure everything's going right in the stores.
Now, as you're talking Entrepreneur Friday, you're talking to entrepreneurs. There's probably lots of people listening thinking, hey, I think I'd like a pizza place. I think I could do that. Why go with a franchise instead of just coming up with your own thing? You know, Sysco's Pizza or something like that.
Yeah, you know, it's the formula is already built. You know, we found these guys and they've got 400 successful stores around the country. You know, they've made a lot of the mistakes already, which is, you know, when you're opening up a business for the first time, it's all about overcoming those kind of challenges. And you know, they've got a recipe that's successful. You know, when we first opened up, within the first couple of hours of opening, like we had thousands of dollars in orders because people know the brand. And, you know, there's a lot of people from Detroit that have moved here. So it's definitely a better way of going, in my opinion.
Yeah, and it keeps you from having to, you talk about mistakes. I mean, some of those mistakes are pretty expensive to make, so avoiding them is a good thing.
For sure. And we've made, trust me, we haven't not made mistakes. We've made them. But the more you can avoid is better.
So now you have, is it five of the restaurants now that you're running?
Yeah, we have five in the city, and then we're starting the Austin, Texas market as well. So we have one open out there as well.
So as a lot of people think about franchising something, they're thinking they're going to run one place. You've now moved beyond that to several. Talk about that transition, maybe the challenge of it, and also the benefits of actually running more than one restaurant.
Well, I think the hardest part is obviously going back to the people, right? So you've got to make sure that you've got, you know, great people in each store. You know, if you've got multiple problems in multiple stores, it starts to compound itself. We've actually had that happen. So we had to go back to the drawing board a little bit and make sure that we developed each store with the right person and made that person a partner, get them invested in the business. And then once you have that, you need to, like, you know, you get to a point of probably about three stores, start to do like an area manager for those three stores that goes in there and checks in and makes sure that they're doing everything correct and, you know, making sure that the management has the support they need. But it definitely gets harder the more you get. But once you get past three, it gets a little easier because you kind of got the formula figured out. So I think we're in a good spot right now.
Really good insight. Thank you. Appreciate it. David Filato, he is an area developer and franchisee for Jets Pizza. He's here in Chicago. He is our Friday entrepreneur. Still to come, this is a great time of year to buy a new car. January, always good for that. We'll tell you about it.
Cashing in with conversation. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
January can be the best time of year for car buying. Let's find out why. John McElroy is an automotive industry analyst, host of Autoline.tv. He's based in Detroit. John, what is it about January? Why is this a good time to buy a car?
Sysco, it's the winter doldrums, you know. Automakers put a big push on to sell in December. You've seen all those TV ads where people come out and they're so excited because there in the driveway is a shiny new car with a big red bow on top. Well, they go all out in December to try and really move the metal and end up the year on a high note. And then comes January. Everybody's paying their bills for the holidays. They're maybe looking ahead to having to pay taxes, possibly get a rebate. And so it is a slow time at dealerships. And whenever it's slow at the dealership, boy, have you got the upper hand when you go to haggle over the price of a new car.
Yeah, and with the new ones, I mean, what are we looking at specifically here? Are we looking at last year's cars? I mean, where are the deals in January?
Well, it's a combination. Of course, the 2020 models are in the showroom, but, you know, they haven't. It depends on the brand and all that. If you can find a 2019, and in some rare cases, if you can find a 2018, man, can you get a screaming good deal on those vehicles. Dealers have got to just move them out of their inventory.
Yeah, you just got to consider, you have salespeople there, and they're trying to make a living, and I mean, I would imagine during a slow month, that really just adds to this sense of need. Like, we got to get something done here.
It is. And in fact, as it gets closer to the end of the month, the pressure on the dealerships really ratchets up more. I mean, if you want the deal of the deal, wait until the end of the month, then go and start shopping for a car. Because many dealers, it depends again on the brand, get rebates from the factory if they hit certain sales targets. So if they're below those targets, they are really motivated to give you a great deal to get that car sold.
What about the expensive cars, the luxury models? Are there deals on those, or do you never really get deals on those?
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, look, dealerships have to buy those cars from the car companies. They have to finance those cars, just like you will finance it from them. So that car just sitting there in the lot or in the showroom is costing the dealer money. They're highly incentivized to sell them, whether they're entry-level models or luxury ones.
Let's talk about financing briefly, because obviously that it can add to the price of the vehicle. However, you got a lot of 0% financing deals.
You do. You have to search around and see which ones offer that. You know, generally speaking, if you're good at shopping for loans and the like, you might find a better interest rate than what your dealer is going to offer. On the other hand, dealers make it very convenient. You're there. You're ready to buy the car. They'll arrange all the financing for you. They will mark it up some, but for many people, the convenience of just doing it all at the dealership outweighs having to go out and shop for it themselves.
Thanks so much, John McElroy. Always appreciate you being on the show. He's the host of Autoline.tv.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.